Mr. Brindley.
May it please the court. My name is Bo Brindley, and I represent the defendant appellant, Rashad Bethany. Mr. Bethany appeals to this court over several issues related to his sentencing, as well as the court's ruling on his motion to withdraw his guilty plea. The first issue that I would like to discuss this morning is the ex post facto violation that follows from Pew versus United States. The government argues that Mr. Bethany forfeited this argument and must establish plain error. In the first place, we disagree. At the district court level, Mr. Bethany identified the ex post facto issue, identified the constitutional violation, identified the Pew case that was ongoing before the Supreme Court, and conceded that under DeMare, the former case that governed this issue, the district court did not have any authority to find the guideline range differently, despite the fact that the Pew case was being litigated before the Supreme Court. By identifying the specific issue, the constitutional provision, and the case before the court, Mr. Bethany did enough to preserve the error. The fact that he did not go through each and every one of the differences between the former and current manuals does not forfeit his argument. This court has repeatedly indicated that forfeiture principles are construed liberally in favor of the defendant. And when the defendant identifies the constitutional principle, the ongoing Supreme Court case, and the issue that affects all of these guideline provisions, he's done enough to preserve it. And if he has preserved it, then it is indeed error and it requires resentencing. I do think that even if subjected to the plain error standard, Mr. Bethany prevails on this particular issue. The government concedes that the error was plain and question only whether it affected his substantial rights. But the government also acknowledges and does not dispute that if the proper manual pursuant to Pew was actually used at the time of the sentencing, then the guideline range would be less than the 360 months to life that Rashad Bethany faced at his sentencing and the range that was used at his sentencing. This court has repeatedly held that a sentencing error that increases a defendant's guideline range impacts necessarily his substantial rights. That was in the U.S. versus Doss and U.S. versus Johns case that we cited in our briefing.
Why doesn't in this case, though? Well, why does it affect his sentence?
It affects his sentence because when you subject him to a higher guideline range, then the district court...
Yeah, but the sentence is below anybody's suggestion of what a proper guideline is, isn't it?
The sentence, if all the proper guideline...
Sentence is, what, 300? And
he gave him 300 months.
Yeah, 25 years.
25 years.
Below the minimum of the guideline range.
5 years below the 360 months to life, that's correct. But the question then becomes whether Judge Leinenweber would have made a different decision if he was confronted with a lower guideline range to consider from the beginning. And in the other cases where this matter has been considered...
Yeah, you would think he would have made a different decision if we grant your request that the plea be vacated and the original charges reinstated, because then, if I understand things correctly, the judge will have no discretion at all. The maximum will be life, and the minimum will be life. You've asked for relief in this case that will land your client with life in prison.
Judge, that would only be the case if the government chose to file 2 851 notices.
Why wouldn't it?
Standard procedure of the government...
It's standard procedure to cut deals with people who are willing to plead guilty.
Yes.
After the defendant says, my guilty plea can't be relied on, I'm demanding a chance to go to trial, it's standard procedure to file the informations.
It's a rare case where the office here files two informations and gives it, subjects someone to mandatory life, and I don't think there's any facts about this case that would support that.
Your client is tempting fate, to say the least.
But and if we were dealing with that issue, Judge, and the case was remanded based on the withdrawal of the guilty plea issue, then further negotiations could certainly be engaged in light of the current state of the law. But to go back to the prior issue, which was the question of an increased guideline range, in every instance, as I understand it, when a guideline range is higher that the judge considers at sentencing, and he necessarily considered it, if that's higher than what it would be due to a sentencing error, then it's considered to be plain. The error is considered to be plain. And I don't think this case is any different than any of those other cases.
Well, does it have any effect on what his sentence is going to be?
Well, it certainly would, because if he knows he's starting from a guideline range that's lower, he may want to give a lower sentence. More importantly, though, Your Honor, to go back to the point of what the proper guideline range would be if all of the old manual or the proper manual under Pew were considered, it would be 262 to 327 months if all the proper enhancements were removed that are not no longer applicable to Mr. Bethany after Pew. That's 262 to 327 months. The low end is indeed below the sentence issued by the court.
I don't get that. How do you calculate that?
There's in fact three, Your Honor, guideline provisions that were not in effect at the time the offense was committed.
Yes, but only one of them was brought to the district court's attention. But you also have to go back and increase the sentencing ranges for cocaine and other drugs.
Judge, I don't understand.
They've been dropped since 2006. On your view, the right manual is the November 2005 manual, if I understand it. And you have to use the whole manual. You can't use the latest manual with the lower sentences and then cut out the enhancements. You have to go back and use the old manual with the higher ranges.
As I understand the ruling of the Pew case, Judge, it's the manual that is most beneficial to the defendant.
No, that is not the ruling in Pew, nor is it this circuit's law. Our law, reiterated after Pew, is that you use the whole manual that was in force at the time of the offense. The whole thing, not just the parts of it most helpful to defendants.
And if that is the case, Your Honor, then even then, Mr. Bethany would be entitled, due to establishing a plain error, to go before the district court, deal with whatever those different...
It looks to me like the whole manual is 360 to life. If you go back, subtract out those, increase the range, and recognize the fact that you can't have both an increase for obstruction of justice and a reduction for acceptance of responsibility. Very difficult to see the effect. But at all events, you appear not to have calculated it based on the November 2005 manual.
Judge, we calculate the differences in these changes to the manual that we have addressed in our briefing. We have not.
But that's the wrong procedure. You must use the whole manual. And that means the November 2005 manual, lock, stock, and barrel.
And, Your Honor, with respect to that, I would request to file a supplemental brief on that issue, as that issue was not raised by the government in their brief, and we did not respond to that particular question. With respect to the Allain error, Judge, which is also an issue in this case, created by the district court's decision to increase the minimum based on preponderance of the evidence standard, the government has acknowledged that error was indeed preserved, and that the plain error standard does not apply. The government's position is that harmlessness can be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. And with respect to this, Your Honor, and with respect to the Allain violation, we believe that the Allain violation is the equivalent to an element that's omitted from consideration by a jury. And in omitted element cases, in order to find harmless error beyond a reasonable doubt, the Supreme Court has indicated in Netter that you must have a situation where the evidence on that issue is either uncontroverted or incontrovertible, to use their language. There is no doubt in this case, Judge, that the evidence was contested. There was significant cross-examination about who was responsible for additional drug quantity, whether it's this person with the nickname of Bootsy or whether it was Rashad Bethany. And thus, the evidence was contested. It wasn't an uncontroverted situation. In addition, hearsay statements were considered by the judge as part of the determination of the drug quantity, which came through the agent's testimony, Agent Labneau, that would be
inadmissible. Was it contested to the point where you could have gotten below 280 grams?
The judge was only... Yes, the answer, it was contested to that point. The judge was only willing to find 280 grams exactly, despite the government argument for more. And if he was only able to find that minimum, even though they argued for more, it indicates that this wasn't indeed a close and contested case, and one that you can't prove harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And with that, I would request to reserve any time that remains for rebuttal, Judge. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brindley. Ms. Greenwald.
May it please the Court. I'd like to begin with the last point Mr. Brindley made. The judge did not find 280 grams. The court found in excess repeatedly of 280 grams, repeatedly. And when the court was asked to give an amount for the guideline range, the court said, well, let's just say 280 grams. And in the context, it's clear because with the other enhancements that were applicable at the time, he was going to be way over maxed out at life. So the court did not have to define exactly what in the record the amount was. But to say that this court found 280 grams is not accurate and absolutely positively not supported by the record. In addition, Your Honors, there was never any question in the court's mind, in the court's feeling, if finding was overwhelmingly supported by the record, that the defendant was in charge of both drug houses. He was the organizer of this conspiracy. And he admitted that to the agents, which was testified to at the three-day sentencing hearing where lots of evidence and eyewitness testimony was presented, as well as records were presented. But he admitted to the agents when confronted with the undercover purchase of small drug quantities from his drug houses, as well as large quantities sold directly by the defendant to the cooperator on tape, you got me. So this was a case where you had a confession, you had eyewitness testimony from the people working for him, you had undercover investigation, including audio tapes. You had surveillance by undercover officers. The evidence was truly overwhelming that there was more than 280 grams involved in this case. And this is truly a case like Herakli, if I'm pronouncing that name correctly, out of the First Circuit. This case is completely on all squares with this, where you have overwhelming evidence establishing harmless error and establishing the minimum quantity required for the 20-year mandatory minimum in this case. In addition, you have this court's decision in Williams, which was an Apprendi case, but uses the same kind of harmless error analysis. It was a trial case, not a plea case like Herakli, but the same thing where this court found overwhelming evidence. And it is true what Mr. Brinley says, that he at the sentencing hearing contested that he was in charge of these houses, and he certainly did not agree to the 280-gram amount. But any suggestion that there was contradictory evidence presented to the court or anything other than we're not admitting to it is really not supported by the record. So we would maintain that this case, the evidence stood firm and very corroborated that there was at least 280 grams. And so on the Alaney issue, there was harmless error beyond a reasonable doubt on this record. On the Pugh issue, the way this was framed in the district court by defense counsel, it absolutely was brought to the court's attention, but it was brought to the court's attention solely in the context of objecting to the stash house enhancement. It wasn't, let's use the sentencing guidelines in effect at the time, as Pugh ultimately was decided, and certainly
that is now. I take it, the November 2005 manual.
Yes. Well, the crimes happened in 2006. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
That was not what was presented to the court. What was presented to the court was the stash house enhancement was not in the guidelines in effect at the time.
Right. But
and
that,
therefore,
as I said to Mr. Brindley, that kind of argument goes nowhere. The argument, use the latest manual, but not the parts I don't like.
Right.
Is not absolutely. Not proper under Pugh.
Absolutely.
The only proper alternative was the November 2005 manual, lock, stock, and barrel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is going, my argument here, Your Honor, is going to the plain error. It's the government's strongly held position that the appropriate standard of review here is a plain error standard. Because there never was an argument below. Our argument is this issue was not properly framed for the court as use the prior manual. The issue framed from the court was here's our objection to the stash house. And neither the defendant, the probation officer, or the government pointed out to the court that that these that the threat of violence was not in there. And in fact, on appeal, the fact that the criminal livelihood was not in there was pointed out by the government on appeal. That was even waived in their initial brief. So the enhancements that get him down to this lower guideline range and suggest that the court wasn't working with the right front guideline framework were never presented to Judge Leinenweber at all. And it's therefore our position that to the extent this court is going to consider that, it should be done under a plain error standard of review. And under that standard of review, in particular, the evidence is, as Your Honor pointed out, but for those reasons as well as the ones in our brief, not a case where he can establish that either substantial rights were implicated or, more importantly, that this court should exercise its discretion to grant any relief and remand in sentencing. So unless the court has any questions, we would ask that you affirm the conviction and sentence based on our brief and our comments and arguments.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Brindley?
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to the Elaine issue and whether this was a contested omitted element, the whole thing was based on the credibility of witnesses. Witness testimony is what we had from cooperators, basically. And their credibility was severely attacked. And what the government basically asked the court to do is say that it can find beyond a reasonable doubt that these people are credible. And I have, with the court not being able to look at them, that simply is not possible. Moreover, the other issue with respect to this is that, in fact, Your Honor, with respect to the question of whether this is somehow overwhelming evidence, it was contested, and pursuant to the Netter standard, then it would not constitute harmless error beyond a reasonable doubt. With respect to the 280 grams that the court found, the government seems to say, oh, well, he would have found more. Well, they asked him to find more repeatedly on several occasions. And he did not. Even after he had said 280 grams, as I recall, they bring it up again, and he again refuses to. He was only willing to find that triggering amount, and that makes it a close case, and so we would ask that the case be remanded for the reasons we've requested.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brindley, and we appreciate your willingness to